quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. For the campus community radio station, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Catsey, Kwikwetlem, and Stolo First Nations, and at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and today I've got my window wide open during recording because it's kind of gross and muggy on this particular afternoon, and I need to have some air. So please and thank you, deal with it. That sounds kind of mean and rude. Listen, okay, here's what it is, right? If I was making radio at the CBC in a soundproofed windowless room that has air conditioning, this could be different. Our relationship would be different. But I'm not that girl because this is DIY community radio. I'm recording from a residential home, and so thank you for appreciating that and for understanding, and thank you for tuning in to 90.1 FM, where you get lots of different choices for your audio quality experience on radio. Thanks for sticking around. All right, let's get into it. There is no saying this gracefully. It is Canada Day today. It's July 1st. And I don't celebrate it. But I have an hour on radio. And this is the plan today. You're going to be listening to some music from musicians who may or may not have something to do with the topic of Canada. And I'm not going to spend the show convincing you about why you shouldn't celebrate Canada Day. That's a me thing. But I am going to tell you about why, or in what ways you can reconsider this day and make your own decisions about how you want to exist during July 1st moving forward. Because you know what? At the end of the day, you tune in to 90.1 FM because you want to listen to diverse perspectives and voices. And you're going to get that today. Stay tuned and strap in. I guess I keep saying strap in for some reason on the program. I should stop. I don't really like that phrase. Here's music, okay? New release by Nemesis. This is You Wore It Better. Enjoy.
Don't get close. You're gonna hate me. 'Cause once you know what's lying underneath, judgment shows I'm not deceiving. Better. They look cool.
This is Bird Note. Evolution on isolated islands can produce unusual and sometimes unusually large results. Some of the biggest birds ever to have lived evolved on the islands now known as New Zealand, including an enormous raptor called Haast's eagle. With a wingspan of 9 feet and weighing up to 30 pounds, more than twice the mass of a bald eagle, this huge predator hunted the moa, a flightless bird that stood over 10 feet tall. In evolutionary time, Haast's eagle bulked up quickly from an ancestor about the size of a red-tailed hawk. One of its closest living relatives is the little eagle found in Australia, the world's smallest eagle. With no land predators to compete with and plenty of moas to prey on, Haast's eagle attained about 10 times the weight of its founding ancestor in just 2 million years. After the Maori people arrived on the islands, the giant birds began to go extinct. The eagles probably vanished not long after their moa prey, about 500 to 600 years ago. However, a protected site on New Zealand's South Island called the Cave of the Eagle contains Maori paintings of Haast's eagles. Their artwork preserves the legacy of this immense raptor. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.
You know, it would totally make sense that I would become a bird girl now that I'm in my adulthood, because I used to be a dinosaur girl, fun fact. I loved dinosaurs so much when I was little. I thought that I was going to become a paleontologist from the ages, like, 4 to 7. And then it didn't happen. But I became a bird girl instead. And isn't that really just, you know, evolution happening in a single person? That's how science works, right? Hey, it's Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, talking today about Canada on July 1st. But before we go into that, you just heard on the playlist Alsara and the Nuba Tones with Nuba Drums Solo. Before that, you heard The Hallucination, Boogie the Beat, and Northern Voices with Land Back. Fun fact, the cover art for the Land Back single was designed by Wes Harmon, who has been on the program before. And I believe if you go onto Wes's website, you can still find stickers, if not patches, of that very design. So very cool stuff there. All right, we're talking about Canadianness and all that and unpacking it. I don't celebrate Canada Day. You probably already know why. There's also an episode up on CJSF about one of the reasons why I don't celebrate Canada Day. It's actually 2 episodes. I think it was aired July 3rd and 10th from last year with my friend and co-founder of Chinatown Together Gal. You can check that out. But I'm making this exceptionally clear, okay? I'm not trying to convince you to not celebrate Canada Day. But you tune into Typically Tuesdays because you want to hear alternative and complicated perspectives about the everyday, so you're gonna get that. And what I'm gonna talk about today is mostly about unpacking Canadian national myths, particularly about Canada being an open-minded, tolerant, human rights loving, diverse place, which I think, you know, if you've been pretty engaged with a lot of the conversations that Indigenous folks have been leading about, you know, colonization, you will come to understand that maybe not, those things are not true. And that's exactly what they are, right? They're national myths. They're things that help us formulate an identity or an idea about, like, which nation we belong to. In Benedict Anderson's words, right, it helps us formulate an idea of the wider community of people who, with our shared values and perhaps with similar experiences. And I think at the same time, when those national myths get shattered, and we all experience the shattering of those myths, that can also create a sense of community in some ways. But today, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about something that's not within Canada, but rather it's about how Canada plays its role in the international stage, and about what kind of happens in how Canada shapes its immigration and refugee policies. The national myths of Canada don't seem to always be applied when people think about, I think, the role that Canada plays on the international stage and how it tries to market itself around the world. I don't want to sound cynical, but because this is an episode that's meant to be kind of like, you know, these are just some opinions and all that. That is, to me, the most Canadian thing ever. For example, right, Canada is a very pink-washed society. The government and Canadians want to tell people that, like, we're this place that is totally tolerant of LGBTQ plus people. And oh my goodness, our prime minister has not only marched in a pride parade, but has also appeared on Drag Race. How incredible is that? But those things also are used as kind of fodder, I guess, cultural distractions for people to look away from the atrocities that Canada continues to commit onto Indigenous peoples, right? It's not just that Canada has systemic ways of removing Indigenous children from their families, even still to this day through the foster care system. For example, Indigenous children are disproportionately represented in the foster care system, but it's also, you know, it goes all the way back to how Canada was built, in how it tried to eradicate concepts of gender and sexuality that weren't cisgender and heterosexual and procreative under the rules of God, or whatever Christian God there was, right? And it's not just that. It's also about how, and the pinkwashing thing is something I'm going to come back to, because I do have like a legitimate concerning example of something that I've witnessed happening. But let's kind of like prime the stage, let's move on, right? Like, it's also in how, unfortunately, I think a lot of people are not engaged with just the way Canada acts in the international stage. Canada, like most if not all Western powers, it has like imperialist goals, and it wants to participate in trades that are exploitative and have really dire ecological and humanitarian consequences. For example, the war on Afghanistan, which is the longest war that Canada participated in, lasted 20 years, and Canada did not even really gain anything much out of it, except it went there to mess around to, I don't know, forge stronger alliances with the United States or whatever. And now you have so many people who are displaced from their lands there. That's not even to mention the ways in which Canada legitimately participated in human torture. The army participated in human torture. There's actual journalistic evidence of this, right? And in Canada, at the same time, I'm not saying that it shouldn't, but it's going to welcome Afghan refugees and be like, okay, please come to Canada so that we can exploit your labor, essentially, because we messed up your land. Being a refugee in Canada, no matter like the pathway that you take, is not easy because of xenophobia and racism, and because of the intense bureaucracy of the social systems in Canada, which will not and often refuse to acknowledge that their service representatives and their frontline workers too need to be able to speak in additional languages other than English and French in order to be able to serve the very people who they're supposed to serve, which are civilians, right? We can consider, you know, the ways in which Canadian mining companies have participated in destroying the livelihoods of Congolese people in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The land exploitation in Congo has made life like almost completely unbearable. Millions of people displaced from their lands. And this is not something that is new. This is not a new discovery. Since 2003, there have been mining watch organizations who report on the fact that Canadian companies are participating in the land exploitation in Congo. And it has led to not only environmental deterioration, it's also led to like child labor exploitation and just unfathomable rates of sexual violence. So for more than 20 years, people have known about this, right? But I guess the question is, like, maybe because it's not happening within the Canadian borders, that perhaps it is somehow tolerable or okay for people to not know about it, or for people to not be able to get access to this information or have to receive any transparency from it, right? And Canada wants to convince us that, you know, what it means to be Canadian is, you know, we watch Hinterland's Who's Who and we learn about the wildlife. Of course, a lot of the wildlife that was originally here has been eradicated because of settler colonialism. But then an additional question is, like, what about the wildlife of the lands on which Canada and Canadian companies are exploiting that are not in these borders, and that after this land exploitation is displacing people so that they're forced to flee their homes and maybe even have to come to Canada, right? More on this later. Here's music from Ensemble Kaboul, Nastaran.
hope you're doing fine. I got a message for you from Palestine, where everyone is some kind of refugee. No one was left behind to drown in the sea. Maybe the difference was that they were all white and claimed to have a God-given right to take my home and call it their own. And so the refugee was now me. You see, oh super white man, assalamu alaikum. How does it feel to solve your problems and create one for me? And when will I be free? They told me everything about the Holocaust, but no one told me why I should pay the cost. They played wars and told me that I super white man, assalamu alaikum. How does it feel to solve your problems and create one for me?